Welcome to Which Game First, where we explore the hilariously huge world of board games. Did we find any hidden treasures you've been missing out on? Let's find out. First up this week, we dig up the ancient past to discover long-forgotten games in Unboxed. Next up, we chip away at an ominous cube to save the multiverse in Tesseract. And lastly, we pack our 747s with impatient travelers in Now Boarding. I'm Evan Bernstein, filling in for Celeste DeAngelis as host this week, and I'm joined by Mikey Grenier.
Yeah, onward and upward.
And Ed Povilaitis.
Hi, guys. Hey, how many dice can we put on a game and spin it around?
We're about to find out. Let's get to it, because our first game this week is Unboxed, designed by Jordan Sorensen, published by WizKids in 2023. Number of players, 1-4, ages 12 and up, and the playing time is 30 minutes. Okay, Mike, what is in this box?
The cover of the box takes us to a colorful jungle ruin where ancient symbols such as stars and meeples are etched into the stones for future travelers to discover. Inside, we unveil 91 cards separated into decks A through E, 7 reference cards, 32 wooden discs, 3 relic tokens, 5 clue tokens, and a dig manual. And that's what's in the box.
Okay, before we tell you what's in the box, oh wait, we just did that. I'm going to give you a quick overview of how it is played. In Unboxed, you and your friends take on the role of archaeology interns under the direction of Dr. Ramos. At the dig site, the team has uncovered 10 caches of ancient board games that they need your help to figure out how they were played. The centuries have not been kind to the rule books, and there's no internet. So you'll have to infer the rules based on each game's symbology, components, and your own experience and intuition. Hopefully, you've been attending board game night regularly. All right, first you're going to examine. Each of the 10 dig sites will grant you a specific set of components and a few questions to help guide your research. You evaluate, which means to figure out how the components work together. And you play. Once you've successfully recreated the rules, you'll have a fully functional game. Dr. Ramos will be there to provide hints as you theorize and test your designs for all 10 of the provided scenarios, and will hopefully answer the age-old question, what's in the box?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
All right. Well, this game, we have a PAX Unplugged connection to, do we not?
Oh, yeah. WizKids was demoing this at PAX Unplugged.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Yep.
So it was played in person. Mm-hmm. We all played it in person. Mm-hmm. And what did we think about how it looked and the components?
Well, for one thing, I noticed it first at PAX because there was a guy sitting in a tent with the entire like pith helmet and like the safari gear on, just getting like learning how to demo this game. And I'm like, man, this is as on brand as it could possibly be for us. I have to swing by there with my pith helmet on and check this thing out. And he was like, whoa, like he thought I was another WizKids employee trying to like relieve him.
Yeah. Neat. I mean, if that tent, that setup could have been a Wish Game First booth at PAX.
Oh yeah. It had like vines on it and it was like khaki colored and like the game is about like discovering board games. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they've been listening to our podcast since we've been producing it in 2018 and said, maybe we'll make a game in homage to this particular podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It does seem like it says, hey, let's make a game about this podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that we could have come up with maybe a better idea to do just that.
Oh my God. I mean, this is a great idea. It kind of like almost plays, it is a game, but it almost plays like a puzzle too. It's like,
it definitely is a puzzle in a way, because you just get a pile of stuff and some icon done in a kind of a cool ancient iconography style. And you say, okay, what's the game?
Mm-hmm.
And just like Mikey's description, when he said never list the rules, this time there are no rules. It's not like Mikey leaving it out.
No, yeah. There are literally no rules that you are shown. until you figure out, like, you until you get to the end where you go, I think I've got this thing figured out, and then you can look into your little guidebook.
Right, right.
And
it you can answer, because the game asks you questions, and they can give you clues. Mm-hmm. You can now, like, get a little hint. But the idea that you try to figure out how to play the game, and then you check the back of the, you know, the clue book, as it were, mm-hmm. to find out exactly what you were supposed to come up with.
Yeah, and the icon design, it does feel like you're reading, like, the cave wall, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You're in the cave, you got your torch, and you're seeing, like, these animals and these little, you know, figurines and a hand making a gesture or something. You have to interpret, you know, and come up with a working definition of what the heck's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
There's no words.
There's some clues of open hands and closed hands, mm-hmm, and, like, oh, this thing seems to be on top and this thing seems to be underneath, you know? Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's no words on the cards at all, right, either. So it doesn't tell you, you know, like, discard this card when you're done with it. Like, it's pure symbology. And so some of the clues are like, does this symbol kind of look like this piece? Or, you, mm-hmm, know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, that'll be the kind of clue you'll get. Or does that look like a stack of something? You know what I mean? It gives you, like, this little nugget of wisdom to go on. Like, oh, yeah, maybe that associates to this, you know?
Now, speaking of nugget of wisdom, mm-hmm, Mike, what's is this a useful tool for designers, maybe?
Honestly, it felt like a really good way to flex your design muscles, because you're kind of reverse engineering the game. So, you know, you're trying to figure out, okay, why would they do this? Like, what does this mean? And you're like, huh, okay. Like, when you see the mechanics laid out in a purely symbolic way, it makes you, like, think of how your players might interpret your game when they first see it.
Yeah, trying to explain a game without language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's always tough.
Gosh, we're so spoiled with language.
We really are.
In a way. But, and yeah.
It's like you give a pile of stuff. It's like, okay, how can you manipulate this stuff into something that you can play?
Mm-hmm. And, like, how do these things relate to each other? We played a couple. I played the first scenario at the fest, and then the next we played scenario number two in person, mm-hmm, and we got this card, and it had this, like, oval shaped thing with two, like, crossed sickles, and one looked like a piece of, like, rolled up, like, parchment, and the third one looked like a set of mountains, and there was just a hand above the three symbols. I was like, what the heck, you know? but I think we figured out that was the mountains were rock, the, mm-hmm, parchment was paper, and then the sickles were scissor.
Mm-hmm.
There's an ancient version of that. So, like, oh, they want us to play rock, paper, scissors.
Clever.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Whoops.
Yeah, sorry. If anybody's going to play it, yeah, that's scenario two. Those are the easy ones. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they do get harder.
Oh, complex. Yeah.
I mean. I was racking my brain trying to figure some stuff out here. It takes a while. You have to really sit down and concentrate on this.
Yeah, especially interesting. Like, it gives you that experience of creating a game, because you do playtest the game after you think you know how it works. And if it doesn't work when you're playtesting it, then you're like, all right, well, I got to tweak something here to make this actually function as a game.
Yeah. And what if you get stuck? What if you run into a total dead end?
Oh,
they can't go to YouTube for a how to play video.
would kind of defeat the purpose.
No, yeah, they do have, like, a thing in the book that is, like, they'll give you three clues for each thing, and you can look them up or not look them up. You know, like, I guess you have a better success level if you don't look them up. But mm-hmm. And like I said, it gives you little tips, but they're numbered, like, you know, clue number 7, clue number 42, and clue number 60. Are the three clues.
The clue book has them in random places.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Clever.
Yeah. So if you just read this, if you just went all the way to the back of the clue book and just read it, it really wouldn't make that much sense, because you're not sure which game it is attributed, mm-hmm, to. But yeah. I think that the rules for the game I played, I thought my game was better than the one that was in the book, because I mean, they start off really simple, so.
You know. Right, right. So, yeah, that's what I guess another way the game designer could use with it. Okay, that's just what they came up with this. Well, hey, let me take these bits and make a different game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you could tweak from there for sure.
Neat. So there are the correct answers, and then there are the answers that you can come up with on your own, and maybe make something functional out of
it
that the designer didn't intend.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh boy, hope that's not the misuse of the product in some way.
They must have intended that because I think they want people to try to design after they play this game.
Of course, no, the spirit of the game is you definitely feel it as you're playing this game. All right, everyone, it is time to dig up or bury Unboxed, and we're going to start with Ed.
It's like WizKid said, let's make a game about which game first. Figuring out what you're supposed to do with a pile of some bits and icons without any rules is fun. So I'll dig this up for some more guesswork.
Mike?
This game grabbed my attention with a theme and presentation that couldn't have screamed WGF any louder. is it a puzzle? Is it a game or designer training kit? Who knows? Who's to say? But in any of those cases, I'll wholeheartedly dig it up.
Yeah, I felt Unboxed. It was a clever idea on some classic games and game elements. It required deduction and interpretation. Those are always fun elements to any game. And the thrill of rediscovery had me wanting to explore some more. So I, too, will dig it up. All right, Ed, take it away.
What game have you played without looking at any of the rules? Let us know. We are at Which Game First.
Okay, Which Game First? We are doing stuff. We're moving. We're shaking. What is going on, Mikey?
Oh, man. Well, we started recording earlier now. We're recording these episodes in the morning, which is really exciting because I think you're going to see some fresh takes from us since we're doing it at a different time of day. There's also, I'm starting to get the little emails and invites to all sorts of like local cons. So I'm going to be trying to check some of those out and I'll report back to you guys.
Yeah. And speaking of times, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that on Monday nights at 8 o'clock East Coast time, Which Game First is playing a live game and live streaming it. And we would love for all of you to come and join us, watch us fumble and stumble our way through learning a brand new game. We play games with you, the audience. There's usually trivia going on, a lot of interaction, a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And we want you to be part of our game exploring. Also, in regards to times, please remember for our patrons, we are recording bonus points every other Monday at 7 o'clock Eastern time. So we're going to get that bonus points done for you earlier in the evening, 7 o'clock every other Monday night. So check our schedule for that. And patrons, yes, we would love for you to become a patron. How do you do that? It's very simple. You go to whichgamefirst.com. There's a big button right on the main page. Become a patron.
Slam it.
All we ask is $3 a month. It's not much. We have not increased it due to inflation or other economic considerations. We understand your money is very valuable. Your time is valuable as well. And we appreciate very much anything you can do for us. $3 a month will get you the exclusive podcast of Which Game First patrons called
Bonus Points,
in which we discuss all sorts of game related things and sometimes some non-game related things. Oh, yeah. It's fun. You never know what you're going to get. And we also invite you to participate in that recording as well, as we record it live on Monday nights, every other Monday night, 7 o'clock East Coast time. Come join us in our Discord channel and sit in the audience and watch. We also interact with you while we're recording our bonus points. A lot of interaction going on at Which Game First. Yeah. And of course, thank you to our current patrons. We hope if you're not yet, you become a patron. And thank you to everyone out there who supports Which Game First.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next game up this week is Tesseract, designed by James Fernhaber, published by Smirk and Dagger Games. Number of players, 1 to 4, ages 14 and up. The playing time is going to be 60 minutes. All right, Mike, tell us what is in the box.
The cover of the box shows us a mysterious runed cube held aloft by a disembodied hand while several science folk pour over it using their various disciplines while basking in its mysterious glow. Inside, we discover 64 dice, 11 researcher character cards, 41 research cards, 4 lab mats, a breach mat and token, a dice sleeve for stacking, the containment board, a platform board and legs, 4 double-sided base plates, and a rotating turntable. And that's what's in the box.
Well, before we tell you if this game played squarely, I must give you a quick overview of how it is played. Tesseract, a cooperative dice manipulation game where players are scientists trying to contain and control the reactions of an alien artifact in the form of a Tesseract cube consisting of 64 dice. The Tesseract, which sits at the center of the board on that raised turning platform, super cool, we'll get to that. Players will remove cubes to place in their individual labs, transfer them as needed to others, adjust the cube's values, and importantly, isolate the cubes into the containment matrix, which neutralizes them. To contain a cube, a player must have in their lab three or more cubes of all one value, of course a set, or in a sequence, a run, either all of one color or having none of the same colors. By filling the containment matrix completely, they will stop the reaction and win the game. But if the Tesseract has its last cube removed beforehand, or if seven breaches occur, the game is lost and our world ceases to exist. You know, no biggie. Yeah. Asymmetric character abilities include a passive always-on ability and a unique action that is only available to that player. Research cards earned during play help give players an edge, and do the even more powerful containment, as do the even more powerful containment cards, which are unlocked from the Matrix. Can you and your team work together to shut down the Tesseract, or will humankind simply be a blip in the grand scheme of the universe? Yeah, you know, no pressure playing this cooperative game.
Of course, whatsoever. Easy peasy.
Everything's on at stake. All right. Well, I think where else can we start but the components of this amazing game?
Yeah, I mean, do we even have to mention the cube of 64 dice?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I've always wanted to do that. I've always wanted to make a game that had a big block of dice that you play around with.
It's so tempting. You just want to. I mean, you want to go in there and just like, oh, cool. I want this die. You want to start pulling it apart, but you got to be careful what you're doing. You know, you can't just do this willy nilly.
Yeah. And it's not just humanity.
Like the 24 dice, night cube. They have it on a platform on a lazy Susan that rotates around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super smart. Yeah. Super smart component. Yeah,
although you got to be careful because if you spin it too fast, you get a dice explosion and then you have to start over again.
Yeah, it's not one of those merry-go-rounds on the playground when you played when you were 5 years old and you tried to swing your friends off, you know, get forced to have your friends go flying. It's not that game.
You'll have to count on that happening at least once.
Oh gosh,
it happened when at our learn and play that we did for this at PAX. We had one group that like spun it a little too hard early on and just flung the dice out a little bit.
Start over.
Yep.
Restack. What else can you do?
But luckily it comes with like a cool like folding cardboard cube tube where you like put a little cube on top of the Lazy Susan. You just dump the dice in and kind of shimmy it until they're all like squared off. Yeah. And boom, there you go. Your 64 dice.
It does make it, and it actually allowed for transport too. You can leave the sleeve on there and like move the whole thing on top of the platform.
Gosh, you have to have that sleeve. What are you going to do? Sit there and arrange 64 dice by hand?
Somebody would, I guess, but not me.
But yeah.
No. Right? Not me.
Not everybody has that kind of time.
No, so smart components in this game.
Very cool and smart components. And they're easy on the eyes too because it's not. Like most of the things you're paying attention to on the board are the symbols on the dice, which basically equal out to 1 through 6, you know, like a circle with a dot in the middle or a Z with 3 dots is 3, you know.
So. Yeah, I like the graphic design. It has a very nice sci-fi feel to it. Like those runes on the dice, when you first look at them, you're like, what's going on? And then somebody points out, well, they're pip.
Yeah.
And you go, all right, they're pips. All right. They're clever.
Yep, exactly. That made a lot of sense. And they try to stay away from the traditional, you know, the traditional like number shapes, like just the number of sides. It was the number of pips and they were arranged in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah, sciencey feel to it. Yeah, no doubt.
It was new. It was something new. And the art kind of looked to me anyway, like it had this kind of almost 80s color palette, you know, sharp, edgy lines, like big, broad shoulders with points. And then, but it reminded me, like what I thought of was if an ancient society had like a prophecy like drawn on their wall, you know, like what it would look like, what they think the future would look like. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, or they're talking about something that happened in the past.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that too. Right, yeah, exactly. Like a future society telling the story about how this group of scientists saved humanity and that this is the drawing they left behind.
The galaxy itself.
Yeah.
Jeez, there's the power of the Tesseract.
The multiverse.
A lot of detail in some of these cards, like these character cards. You know, they've got one person here like drawing equations mm-hmm. on a board.
Oh, yeah.
And these look like actual scientific equations, mm-hmm. of which I can't interpret. But they're not relative. They're not relative to the rules of the game, but there they are anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, they took some real attention in putting these graphics together.
And yet, like, none of the characters have, like, eyes. They might have glasses, but there's no eyes underneath. But
it's almost like they're in the shadow.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like you're not supposed to know exactly who they were. They're just, like, an image of the person that was, you know? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Great look. Great feel.
Yep, very consistent, too.
It's a co-op. How much communication is allowed in this game?
Fully open communication, mm-hmm. thankfully.
Very rare. Mm-hmm. It's very rare to allow full communication because, you know, in a lot of cases that could, ruin the surprise or make it easier. But this game is so tight that they're like, go ahead, talk as much as you want. See if you can succeed.
We're still going to get you.
We're still going to exactly.
Regardless.
Yeah. I think that's actually a key part of this game, which is it's a puzzle. Mm-hmm. The Tesseract is doing its thing after every player turn, which mm-hmm. keeps the pressure on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the players have to collaborate in order to solve this puzzle. Mm-hmm. If everybody's just doing their own thing, the odds of it working out?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of good to have the Tesseract doing its thing between each person's turn because it helps to balance the number of players versus the difficulty a little bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty smart design there.
How did it feel during the course of gameplay? Could you feel the tension?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I think so too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because this Tesseract is you need to pull dice off of it to do, you know, to shut it down, but also it itself is collapsing down and it's always taking the die closest to the bottom of the actual cube, so it gets to all, like, if one of the rows gets pulled off all the way to the bottom, it reveals kind of like a danger thing that happens, like, oh no, mm-hmm. it's gonna do something bad now because we got to the bottom. So you're always trying to take them from the top or manipulate it so that they're not going down too fast and you're getting nailed by these little things. Yeah.
And speaking of manipulations, each character, and you're playing a character, mm-hmm. has what, a special ability, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of different things they can do, actually. There's an action, and then there's kind of like a passive thing that happens with that character, too.
So, yeah, and that ability is something that only they can do, or something they do better than anybody mm-hmm. else. So, again, playing into that collaboration, you know, if you have, you know, this person's really good at containing cubes. Mm-hmm. And he does it more efficiently. So maybe we'll be trying to puzzle some stuff or transfer some stuff over so you can contain your, you know, action efficiency is part mm-hmm. of it.
Yep. It's a huge part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a feature I like in these kinds of mm-hmm. cooperative board games is that everybody has a role. Remember, mm-hmm. we played the submarine game, the boat game. Everybody had a specific role on that ship.
Yeah.
In order to complete, you know, the function and gain success. I felt the same here.
Yeah, you'll pass off an action that you could have done on your turn to let the person who's more efficient with it do it on their turn instead a lot of times. Kind of like a pandemic. It has that feel mm-hmm. where you're like, each person's an important cog in the machine, you know. So you want to let them shine when it's their turn.
Hey, Mike, what's a rule that's crucial to success that didn't get enough attention?
So there's a rule that's mentioned. It's in the rule book. It's in the appropriate place in the rule book and everything. But there's you know, without knowing every detail of the game for you guys out there, if the number that you're trying to get rid of matches a number that's in like this danger zone area, you can like completely like wipe it off of there, like the matching numbers. So it helps you to, it makes your choice of which thing you're going to try to contain that turn a little more important because, mm-hmm. you know, you can get a little extra efficiency out of it, which is the edge that you need to like be able to win the game But mm-hmm.
Yeah, a big part of the game is managing and manipulating the prime dice in order to avoid breaches. Mm-hmm. And while that rule is in the rule book, the player aid doesn't tell you about it. Like, oh, if you contain a dice that matches the die in the prime area, you can get rid of that dice in the prime area, which is huge.
It's a big deal. For containing
breaches.
Yep, because, so what happened?
If it was on the player aid, which is beautiful in all other regards, it has all the other information, but when it talked about containing it, it doesn't let you know that, hey, if it matches the prime area, dish it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, by the way, here's this very game critical rule.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like a free, like, it almost equals out to like two free actions if you do it right. So, which is, in a game all about action efficiency, is very important. So, some reiteration of that rule would be kind of worthwhile, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it would have been a true experience unless we played with the upgraded metal dice.
Oh, yeah. Right?
I mean, of course, I got the version with the metal dice because,
Yeah. They have this cool, like, aluminum finish on them. They got weight to them, so they stack a little. They're a little hardier when they stack on top of each other, so they were great.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you make it something look more sci-fi? I know. Make it out of aluminum.
I agree. But hey, even the standard dice that it came with, I was even impressed.
Yeah, no, they were
with
nice.
Those, like, colorful and, intriguing and inviting. Again, you're reaching your hand and they're like, oh, I want to take the. There's something inviting about pulling a bunch of dice out of a much larger cube in any regard. Metal dice, if you can do it, go for the upgrade. All right, game explorers, it is time to dig up or bury Tesseract. Let's start with Mike.
All right. Well, this game isn't only eye-catching, but it brings the fun of deep thought and tense moments that are great for any co-op. There was a little bit of quarterbacking potential here, but not enough to disrupt each player's autonomy, so I say dig this up.
Ed?
Tesseract has a nice sci-fi vibe and a challenging puzzle to solve. Teamwork is critical in solving this puzzle. There are 64 dice and a lazy Susan. How can I not dig this up?
Yeah, Tesseract, a very cool strategy game with tons of dice. And hey, the strategy is just off the charts. I think the replayability here is boundless. Mm. And on top of that, everything looked really cool. There is no reason not to dig it up.
Yeah.
Take it away, Ed.
So, what cooperative puzzles have you enjoyed and disassembled? Let us know. We are at Which Game First.
And our last game this week is Now Boarding. Designed by Tim Fowers, published by Fowers Games in 2018. Number of players, 2 to 5, ages 10 and up. Playing time, 30. To 60 minutes. All right, Mike, what is in the box?
The cover of the box reminds me of a cartoon-based ad campaign from the days gone by, complete with a disproportionately thin air stewardess sporting a short pink and red dress, finished with a tiny red hat welcoming you to the giant plane. When we board, we see 72 passenger cards, 5 plane tokens, 5 plain player cards, 30 upgrade tiles, 6 weather tokens, 16 weather cards, 30 anger cubes with stickers, a 30-second timer, and a double-sided board. Now 60% larger! And that's what's in the box.
Okay, before we tell you if this game took off, I must give you a very quick overview on how it is played. Now Boarding is a real-time cooperative game, in which you work together to fly a fleet of airplanes. You must deliver all the passengers to their destinations before they get too angry. And passengers, guess what? They're constantly arriving. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Each player is in control of an airplane, which will have the ability to travel at a certain speed and have capacity for a certain amount of passengers, and might even be able to travel along special designated routes. The idea of the game is to pick up passengers in designated cities and fly them to their destinations. That's simple enough. But you won't be able to move all the passengers on the board located in the cities all across the country. the more turns that a passenger has to wait to be picked up and flown to their destination, they're going to start to accumulate these anger points. Yeah, if a passenger gets 4 anger points, they're going to file a complaint to the airline. And if 3 total complaints come in, the game's over and everybody loses. But there are chances to upgrade your plane to fly faster and carry more passengers to handle the load. All players take all their turns at the same time. This allows for clever handoff of passengers from one to the other. Mm. So let's keep those skies friendly, if we can. Oh boy, yes. Mm-hmm. Flying people, flying passengers around the country. We've all been passengers on airplanes before. Mm-hmm. I don't know that any of us have really had the experience of being responsible for getting passengers flown around the country. And that's what this game's about. Let's talk about how it looks and the components.
Well, from what I saw, it reminded me, and you know, I didn't live through the 50s, but I think that it looked like a 1950s ad campaign where you have like these starkly drawn, disproportionate, weird looking like stewardess with like the ray tracing in the background. You know, it's like a 2-color background. Maybe this is even 1920s. I don't know, but it's an old timey advertisement for this airline. It looks like to me.
It does have that kind of feeling to the art and everything. All the characters, anyway, all drawn in like an animation style, like like a nicer version of something you might find in.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know where you'd find these, well, actually. And now that you mentioned, I'm looking at like, I don't know, like maybe some like children's comic strip or something.
Or a commercial from the past, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Definitely cartoons. Mm-hmm. But, you know, very all with expressions. Mm-hmm. Some of these passengers, you know, kind of happy. Some look concerned and some look downright, you know,
frazzled,
dissatisfied.
Yeah. I wish they had 2 sides, one with the happy, and then when they start to get mad, you flip it over and it's their mad clever face. That'd be cute. But yeah,
clever. And our airplanes themselves, what we had, like, basically 2 airplanes. There's an airplane meeple we're moving around the actual board, but there's also an airplane that we're building in front of us as we go and upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're kind of cleverly done. They're talking about the physical components. We actually played this game on Board Game Arena.
Right.
But no, when you're looking at the components, it's kind of cool. You got like a little cockpit and a tail. And then you put stuff in between it to represent the expansion of your airplane. Mm-hmm. Like how many windows you have is how many passengers you can carry.
Mm-hmm.
And the length of your wing is how far you can fly.
Yeah, this is totally different than the experience we had. The in-person version looks totally different because it was more like a series of numbers and on the online version of it. It kept it real simple. So, yeah, it might be an interesting experience to build your little plane there.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So, coordinating your trips for maximum efficiency. A co-op again. And let's start with, okay, were we allowed to talk to each other?
We are.
Had to, really.
But it's a real-time game.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the information isn't revealed to us until the timer flips over. So, yes, you can sit down and communicate. Now, figure out, hey, you want to pick this guy up and I'll pick that guy up and bring him over there.
Mm-hmm.
But not all the information is present. So when the timer clicks and you got 30 seconds to talk about stuff and deliver the passengers.
Yeah.
Oh, Mike, you love timed games.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It makes me so tense. Like, we're like, there's a lot of, like, daisy chaining in this game where it's like I want to drop it off as far as I can go and then Ed could pick it up there because he's headed there anyway and then start moving the other direction, but like we have to do that in the right order because if I land and take off without dropping that passenger that Ed could scoop up, well we lost that whole opportunity. So that real-time thing puts the pressure on for you to do things in the right sequence without wasting too much time.
It is about action efficiency again, and there are ways to specialize your plane for certain routes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I can do the route, the shorter route between these 2 cities because I have that little perk on my plane. Everybody's plane starts off with at least 1 perk, and you can buy additional perks.
Oh,
and that's the other thing that makes kind of a weird thing. The amount of money that each player gets. It's individual. It's not like, oh, we collectively gained this money.
Mm-hmm.
You get money for per passenger. So, yeah, we're cooperating. But you're like, well, it's $10 if I go there. Why am I going to go over there and help you out for five when, mm-hmm. or $3 when I can go do this thing right here for 10?
Yeah, and that money is like your VP sort of too. So you got to be careful how you spend it. I personally was going for versatility. I wanted to have as many perks as possible so I could actually fill in all the blanks of what the other two guys were doing by having my plane by routes that like cross the middle of the states, you know, and then also having more capacity. So, you know, I could like my turn could just consist of bringing somebody, you know, from like halfway to somewhere and like being able to drop two people off and bringing somebody else halfway. And then the next turn, my first half of my turn would be dropping somebody off, picking them up and bringing another person halfway, just so I can kind of like fill in the gaps of wherever these guys couldn't get to.
Mm-hmm.
And using those dollars to upgrade your planes. I mean, my gosh, you have to upgrade your plane as you go. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, there's no way you're going to be able to keep up with the passengers because passengers keep arriving after mm-hmm. every round.
Oh, they stack mm-hmm. up. Yeah.
And I think there's some interesting choices in those upgrades because you can improve your capacity, carry more passengers, or you can increase your speed to be able to travel farther.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or buy a certain route, which you're otherwise, you know, restricted from flying.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly.
Unlock those special routes, and oh my gosh, you know, the board really opens up a whole other sectors to you that weren't available at the beginning.
Yeah, getting that done earlier rather than later is good because you can try to stay ahead of the curve by doing that. But it's tough because you start off with not that much money to buy stuff with.
Right.
It's true. And talk about keeping ahead of the curve. You got to kind of keep ahead of the weather in this game mm-hmm. as well, because there are weather impacts.
Yeah, which is kind of clever. What they do is the one path gets shorter because you have the jet stream. You're going with the jet stream. And then the other one has stormy weather. So it adds an extra dot. So it takes mm-hmm. longer to go through the stormy weather.
Yeah, and when your actions are like, basically, you have like three or four actions or movement points, and then a storm shows up, it could ruin your entire like planning that you did during the
Yeah, it's like I was planning on being able to get there just the right amount of movement. Now it's nope.
Yep, it's tough. You can buy temporary upgrades too, right? It's like I need my plane to go a point faster this turn because of the storm or whatever. So you can actually pay for it.
So you can buy that. Like, all right, I'm going to spend my $2 and get an extra speed. Yeah.
Which was weird. I'm not sure how you pay money for that and like how that correlates with an actual airline.
More fuel? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. If you buy like rocket fuel or something, I don't know.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, you're not going to be able to deliver all passengers. You know, I mean, I think in any game, you're bound to have at least one totally disgruntled passenger mm-hmm. by the end of the game who's going to file that complaint. Perhaps that has to work into your strategy of getting this game completed as well.
Uh-huh.
You're going to have to, you know, there's going to be at least one or at most two totally dissatisfied customers. Yeah.
You want everybody to be fine. A little bit angry.
If only one or two unhappy customers, you can live with that. But three, that's it. Game over, man.
And that's amongst all players. So, you know,
right. You're
all responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you really do have to keep an eye on what everyone else is doing. Mm-hmm. Truly cooperative in that sense.
I mean, I think because we did, you know, a few co-op games today, just like looking at them all back to back, one common theme pops up in all of them, and I think a lot of other co-ops too, is that a lot of the work you do in a co-op is triage. You're basically trying to, you know, stem the bleeding. There's never a situation where everything's under control and you're relaxed. You know, they mm-hmm. usually jump right in with some tension.
I know I've been a disgruntled passenger at times, so I, you know, you can feel it. It's like it brings out, which is not fun. Rage. I mean, come on, let's face it. So I don't know. This game stirs up a couple angry emotions, I think. And you can't help it. Yeah. Even though you're the one flying the plane, not being the passenger, mm-hmm. you still can't help but feel the sympathy pain.
You don't feel any sympathy for the airlines after playing this game? Like, oh man, they were late, but it's hard, you know?
Yeah, not easy.
Yeah, and the real-time aspect of the game makes it more frantic. Because, like, unlike the other, you know, co-op review today, it's like, you can take your time and, you know, collaborate and do your... And then any time, you feel pressure in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, time is a factor.
Yeah.
Which I think is true to the theme, but it does, you know, give you that little frantic.
Oh yeah.
Like
absolutely. Hey Mike, should there have been an app in which, you know, passengers kind of start yelling things randomly during the course of the game at you?
Like, come on, what's going on here? Just like a bunch of angry voices.
I can't believe this.
I mean, an angry voices app would be really useful for a lot of stuff anyway.
Add to that pressure, add to that tension. Yeah, oh my gosh. As if there's not enough.
Like already. A soundtrack of people milling around and getting upset. Just
babies crying.
Exactly.
Oh god. Oh my gosh, scary. All right. It's time to dig up or bury. Now boarding. Ed.
Now boarding. Put you under the clock to keep the passengers happy. Cooperation can be tricky, as money is also earned individually. I was interested enough to keep my first play and try again, so I'll give this a light dig for now.
Mike?
It's kind of your typical cooperative resource management, you know, game, which isn't a bad thing. I love co-ops. The visuals were soft, pretty, interesting, and the play was very tight. It might grow stale after a few plays, but for now, I definitely would dig it up. I'd check it out again.
Now boarding. I thought it was an eerily accurate game. I mean, who hasn't been a disgruntled passenger on a flight or had delays? Ugh. The tension is definitely palpable. But you get to experience this time from the side of the airlines. It's a clever co-op. I think it's worthy of the title. So dig it up. Ed, take it away.
What was your memorable airline adventure? Let us know. We are at Which Game First on all social media.
And that brings us to the end of our show. We look forward to hearing about all the game exploring that you've done. If you'd like more perks, content from our show, including exclusive episodes for just $3 a month, you can go to our website, click on Become a Patron today, and get access to bonus points.
Bonus points!
And if you get a chance, of course, leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcaster. It helps others find the show. Spread the word. Word of mouth helps us a ton. Oh, and join our chat on Discord, the Discord server, Which Game First. And our Patreon supporters get, of course, exclusive access to those channels. Don't forget, follow us on all your favorite social media sites. We are Which Game First on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Happy gaming, explorers!
Come fly with me on the not-so-friendly skies.
We must contain the power of the Tesseract or we'll all be destroyed. No pressure.
That's a hand and a piece of paper and a wheel and a coin. What am I reading?